I'm Matt Miller. Thanks so much for listening to Left, Right, and Center. You know, Elvis Mitchell is on the inside of culture, like really inside. Every week, he hosts intimate conversations with pop culture luminaries about their influences, their life, their work. And each week, I'm amazed at the insights I hear on The Treatment. Check it out. Find The Treatment on KCRW's iTunes page. Thanks.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, this is Left, Right, and Center.
You like potato?
And you like potato?
You like tomato?
And you like tomato?
Potato?
Potato?
Tomato?
Tomato?
Let's call a thing
Paris and radical Islam the week after. The Swiss surprise and economic turmoil, plus Mitt Romney redux and the Supremes take up gay marriage. Hello again and welcome to Left, Right, and Center, your civilized yet provocative antidote to the self-contained opinion bubbles that dominate political debate. I'm Matt Miller holding down the center. Robert Scheer is here in Santa Monica on the left. Rich Lowry in New York on the right. Josh Barrow also here in Santa Monica occupying his own political, unique political space. That's Josh Barrow of the New York Times and The Upshot. Welcome all from across the country, across the political spectrum. Rich, you don't stand a chance today because it's like three of us are actually here in studio. You're like a kind of eavesdropper trying to break in, I think, from time to time.
When do I get to go to Santa Monica?
I'm always stuck
here in New York, freezing temperatures.
And it's I got to say, it's gorgeous here today.
It really is beautiful, Rich. You should see it.
So sorry about that. And obviously a big news week, the kind of aftermath of Paris still dominating the headlines. Rich Lowry, why don't I start with you? What do you make of the magazine selling out in a blockbuster printing of 3 or 4 million, arrests being made in Belgium and elsewhere? Still lots of concern about where this all stands. The Jewish community in France, lots of conversation and reporting about the fears they have. What interests you and where this is headed?
Well, I think the displays of unity in France have been quite stirring. The march was amazing. But more important to me than that sort of symbolism would just be some basic truthfulness about a few key things, including that Europe has an immigration problem. And the last thing you'd want to do when you have immigrants and the children of immigrants that you're having trouble assimilating is to constantly add to their numbers. Unfortunately, that's the default European immigration policy, and if you question it, you're tarred as an extremist and all the rest of it. And then also honesty about the fact that this is a threat that emanates from within Islam, doesn't represent all of Islam, doesn't represent a majority of Muslims by any means, but it is radical Islam. And the unwillingness, which must come from an edict on high, of administration officials just to say that phrase, radical Islam, reached a really wholly ridiculous level over the last week when Josh Earnest and all the rest of them were just going through these absurd verbal gymnastics to avoid the obvious.
Bob Scheer, where do you think we are a week later? Even the Pope got into the act after the reaction, right, saying that he made some remarks that obviously, you know, the terrorist act against the magazine folks was unacceptable and heinous. And yet, trying to say that, you know, if you I saw one quote where he said, you know, if you insult my mother, I'm going to punch you. And so expressing some empathy for those who feel the kind of insult to religion crosses some line, obviously not justifying what happened, but take it where you will.
Well, as I once before praised the Republican Supreme Court, headed by William Rehnquist, in which Scalia was on, in a unanimous decision, they said and established a standard that the rest of the world has a hard time following, and I think it's a very high standard, that material that is outrageous, offensive, disturbs people, is nonetheless protected by our view of a universal right. It's not just the Bill of Rights applies to Americans, but we have affirmed that this is a universal right, that free speech is a value unto itself, essential for a democratic and rational society, and people have to suck it up if they're outraged or offended, and they certainly can't resort to violence, nor should the power of the state be applied. Now, France has had a very contradictory view on this, and we're seeing that in place right now, where they round up 54 people that they claim have offensive ideas. They jail a comedian who they've done repeatedly, for they argue they don't like his views, or they're anti-Semitic, or they deny the Holocaust. I just want to mention one thing about Rich's point about radical Islam. The center of radical Islam is Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has funded radical Islam, and we have found radical Islam to be very convenient. We did in Afghanistan when they opposed the secular Soviets and the people allied with them. We did when radical Islam opposed Saddam Hussein, and we certainly did in Syria, where we have been connected with people who have a very extreme view of this thing.
Josh, what interested you in the last week?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Rich is right that Europe has failed to integrate its immigrant populations, but I think that failure was a choice, and I don't think the only solution there is to have less immigration. Europe has failed in a place where the U.S. really has broadly succeeded, where immigrant communities here, for the most part, are economically integrated, they're socially integrated and sort of become less socially distinct as they go through the generations. Some, including the Muslim community in the United States, are actually disproportionately economically successful and have above average incomes. And so I think that's why the United States does not have a homegrown Islamism problem as Europe does. You can get occasional self-radicalized people in the United States, people like John Walker Lynn, but it's not possible to build a network here to conduct terrorist operations within the United States. And that's why it's not really a threat here in the way it is there. I think the failure in Europe is largely an economic failure. They've created a situation where you can have these underclass communities of immigrants who are unable to get jobs. They have a very rigid labor market policies that generate high unemployment. High unemployment gives employers the luxury of being like, I'm only going to hire white people because I have so many hires available to me. I think there is really pervasive racism within Europe against people in these communities. And then on the other hand, you have much more generous welfare state policies that make it possible to subsist on government assistance without working. It's not really a way to thrive, but it is a way to live. And so you have these communities that feel excluded from French society, that are economically impoverished. And I think if Europe had policies that looked more like in the United States, that say basically come here, but you have to work to support yourself, and we're going to welcome you into our economy and make it possible for you to do that, I don't think you'd have such disaffection. I'd note French Muslims are actually on average not very religiously observant. Only about a quarter of them even go to Friday prayer services. So I don't think that it's that, you know, there's this strong ideological need to be separate from French culture. I think it's more that this is a group that has been excluded from French society. Islamism becomes a vehicle for that discontent. So fundamentally, if Europe wants to fix this, they should start by fixing the economy.
You know, Rich, I want to get a last thought on this, but this puts me in mind of Christopher Caldwell wrote this book that looked great that I only read the first chapter of on European immigrants, and I'm forgetting the title, but I think I have to go.
I know where you're coming from.
But what's the, we'll figure out and put it on the site.
So many of us do that with books.
But it was on just this issue and the anxiety Europeans feel and the tensions about, what some were calling the Muslimification of parts of Europe. If I can recall the title, I'll share it because it seems certainly seems worth reading. Now, Rich, before we leave this, Bob's raising his
at
hand.
At least Bob, the first
wait,
chapter.
Wait, Bob
first
is raising his hand, and because he's here physically, Rich, in beautiful Santa Monica.
Oh, no. I have some points to respond to,
well,
Josh.
Go ahead, Rich, okay. And then Bob. Okay,
I'll just go really, really quickly here. I agree with Josh entirely. The economy is a big part of this picture, but also the unique history of France plays a role here, where on the one hand, France is traditionally an ethno state, where it's going to be different for people who are different ethnicity to fit in. At the same time, it has layered on top of that, since 1789, this view of itself as the French Republic that takes no account whatsoever of religious and ethnic differences. So part of the problem is France has traditionally been an ethno state. The other part of the problem is the French state really doesn't kind of turns its back on the people out there in the Paris suburbs because it doesn't want to take account of, oh, there might be people who aren't fitting in as well as they should because of their religion or ethnic background, and what can we do to help them? Because that's not the way, that's not in accord with their ideals. And, you know, also just the secularism of the French state plays a big role here, where if you have people that have strong religious commitments, they're going to feel at odds with or potentially repelled by that secularism. And some of them, obviously not all, swing radically in the other direction. And that's when you get people like these brothers who committed this horrible act.
Bob? Yeah, I don't think you can coast along on this ahistorical view. I mean, France had a position as a colonial power. The reason that you have the largest Muslim population in France is precisely because they had the idea, first of all, bringing Catholicism to Algeria and to Morocco and so forth. And they also had a policy that Algeria was just another province of France. They also had that view towards Indochina at one point. So this is a blowback from imperialism and from that particular kind of imperialism in the case of France, where they thought they were bringing God and civilization, and these people were, in fact, going to be the new French. And what you have is blowback. The other thing is when you decide to replace governments in Libya and Syria, and France has done that aggressively, and your own people go there as recruits to overthrow secular governments, those people come home.
Let us know what you think about where all this stands a week after the awful stuff in Paris at kcrw.com/LRC. Big news on the economic front, Josh Barrow. It's kind of arcane and hard to understand, and we probably... Even if we understood all the complexities, it may be hard to deal with on public radio. But the Swiss changed their peg on their currency, and kind of all hell broke loose in the markets. This comes against this backdrop of the European Central Bank finally going to do quantitative easing. You know, an injection of new money that the Fed in the U.S. Has done with controversial, but you know. Impact, but still something we did years ago and that they're only finally getting around to. What should we make of all this?
Yeah, well, I mean, just to sort of give the bite-sized version of what happened in Switzerland. Switzerland's a country with about 8 million people and an enormous banking sector, and it's traditionally viewed as a very rock-solid place. So as things started falling apart in Europe a few years ago, you had a lot of people taking their bank accounts that were denominated in other currencies, typically the euro, moving them to Switzerland. So basically you have a lot of people suddenly trying to buy Swiss francs, this currency of this small country. Like anything, if everybody's trying to buy it, the price goes up. And the Swiss franc was becoming extremely valuable, which is great if you're a Swiss person looking to go on vacation somewhere else with your Swiss francs. But it's not good, for example, if you're somebody who makes watches or chocolate in Switzerland and would like to sell them to people abroad. So Switzerland had this policy of forcing a peg of its currency. They say the Swiss franc will not be worth any more than 1.2 euros. And they held the line on that for a few years. But I think the idea at the time was this was sort of a temporary condition as things settled down in the Eurozone, people would stop trying to buy so many Swiss francs. What the Swiss have realized now is this is really permanent. The euro has weakened and the European Central Bank is going to do more quantitative easing, which might finally bring a little bit of inflation to the eurozone, hopefully. And so it was becoming really expensive for them to go out and buy all these euros at frankly, an inflated price. So they kind of suddenly announced, oh, we're not going to do that. And then the Swiss currency jumped about
30% or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's this very sharp one-day move, but it was sort of a recognition that you can only, you know, currencies like any other good really need to float in price. And if, you know, the Swiss could only for so long basically say we're going to force this. But I think it's a sign of continued instability in Europe. People lack confidence in the euro. And so, to the extent that the euro is going to be a problem basically forever, that led the Swiss to have to admit that this situation wasn't temporary. But I think it's just another sign that the euro has been a really, really terrible and unsustainable idea.
Great explanation by Josh Barrow. Hold that thought. Much more in a second on the Swiss franc and its economic impact, plus Romney Redux and the Supreme Court takes gay marriage. You're listening to Left, Right, and Center.
Listen to Left, Right, and Center on demand from KCRW's smartphone apps, now for the iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. And share your thoughts on today's show at kcrw.com/LRC.
Visit the Which Way LA blog for an extension of what Los Angeles is made of. News, arts, culture, and the fabric of Southern California, all in one place and updated daily. Check it out now at kcrw.com/WhichWayLA.
Back again with Left, Right, and Center. I'm Matt Miller in the center. Robert Scheer here on the left. Rich Lowry on the right. Josh Barrow of the New York Times Upshot. And also joining us right here in Santa Monica, Robert Scheer, Swiss Euro fallout, economic turmoil. I know you've been following this closely. Where do you think this stands?
Well, Switzerland is not important economically for the reason mentioned. Small population and people are not buying watches anymore. And chocolate can be made elsewhere, but the real value
of nice
Switzerland,
place.
The real value of Switzerland is a place for...
There's going to be an uproar in the Swiss listenership. Of
our Swiss listeners are turning off as we speak.
It's a good place for financial bandits to put their money, including the biggest banks. The main thing Switzerland has done, and the U.S. government has criticized them, our Treasury Department even has criticized, is basically allowed people to put money there and not be held accountable. And so the Swiss banking problem is a different one, but I think this is missing the real point. The world economy is not doing well, and the biggest sign of that is the collapse of the oil price. Part of that had to do with new technology, but the fact is the world economy is in real trouble, certainly beginning with those countries that depend on oil, and that includes the United States, where states like certainly Texas, are in serious trouble, but it also England, which depended upon the oil and others. And I don't think enough attention has been paid to that. I think that we're in very real danger now of moving into another recession. And there are important signs in that the unemployment rate looks like it might even be ticking up again.
Rich Lowry, the franc,
couple of points. I just want to underline what Josh was saying about the euro, which depends on the absurd fiction that Germany and Greece are basically the same kind of economies in all sorts of ways. And that's just a lie. It's never been true. It never will be true as long as they're Germans and Greeks. So I consider the euro unsustainable, but it will be sustained for as long as possible because unraveling it would be so painful to do. On the U.S. economy, things are looking actually pretty good as far as I can tell, at least compared to the rest of the world. And a large element, usually when the price of oil is dropping precipitously, it's a sign of recession and a sign of slackening demand. And there is weakening demand around the world, but there's a huge supply element to this with OPEC still pumping and with all these additional supplies coming online in the United States. And at the margins, yes, this is going to hurt U.S. energy producers if it stays this low or goes much lower. But in terms of the rest of the economy, it's just an unbelievable boon. Having cheaper energy is good for consumers. It's good for almost every sector of the economy, from industry to agriculture. And that's why if you look at some of the surveys about how people are feeling about the economy, it's still not great. A lot of people still think we're in a recession because they haven't felt the economic benefits yet, but they are becoming more optimistic than they were a year or two or 3 years ago.
One thing I toss in, Josh, before you take it away, is that the one point Rich made about, Germany's not like Greece. Well, the New York economy is not like Alabama's, but you've got political union. And that's, to me, seems to be the implicated thing that was if the euro was a mistake, it was because they can't, you can't have
you've got political union. You also have a single language. If the economy goes to hell in Alabama, people can move to New York and vice versa. Legally, you can do that within the Eurozone, but if you only speak Greek, it's probably going to be hard for you to get a job in Germany. I come down somewhere between Rich and Bob on the economy right now. I think falling oil prices are mostly about supply side factors, but I'm also watching falling copper prices, which really I think is a demand side thing. Copper goes in lots of stuff, and when copper prices fall, that's because people aren't going to build as many power plants and order as many electronics. So I think there is real worldwide economic weakness. That said, the U.S. numbers are really quite strong. I look at the last 12 months of job reports, 3 million jobs created last year compared to 2 million the previous couple of years. We're starting to see some incipient signs that maybe we may get wage growth in 2015. The question is, how long can things be good here even while things look really quite weak in Europe, weak in China? To some extent, that's going to have to come back on us.
I want to give Bob a last word on the economy. The only thing but I do want to add, the job stuff, I'm sure we'll hear Obama in the State of the Union touting those figures, and yet I'm still worried about the wage side and and yet compared to the rest of the world, we look like we're going gangbusters. Briefly, Bob, because we still got ground to cover.
Yeah, wages have not gone up. Let's just stipulate that.
We agree.
And we're not. Okay, let's just talk about oil. I'm all for low oil prices, but then don't give me the pipeline. Don't tell me we have to destroy the environment. Don't tell, you know, that's what's going on. You've got the Republicans on the one hand saying we have to rip up the countryside from here up through Alaska. And at the same time, people are telling you when oil is selling, when oil sells for less than $70 a barrel, none of that stuff works. And that's where, and indeed, a lot of the pumping, even in the North Sea, doesn't work. So you have a major problem in terms of a disparity of your investment and your exploitation.
Mitt Romney, Rich Lowry, causing controversy, dipping his toe in the water, feeling like maybe this time is my time and the field doesn't look that great. A lot of Republican bigwigs and donors are trying to give him the stiff arm. You're among them, I think, or are you?
Oh, man. You know, we talked about how depressing it was that we're going to have another Bush run, and this is perhaps even more depressing. And I just believe very strongly it should be a turn-the-page election for Republicans. And you look at the guys who have been making the most serious moves and noises over the last month or so. It's Jeb Bush, Mike Huckabee, Mitt Romney, none of whom are fresh faces. And I think Romney, it appears, really wants to be president, and you don't become president unless you run, and unless you there's a certain element of shamelessness and delusion involved, because there are always going to be doubters about anyone who runs for president. There are major doubters about Barack Obama, and he just went ahead and did it in 07. But Romney, he won last time around against a really weak field, basically by default, with massive financial and institutional advantages. The field is not going to be that weak this time, I don't believe, and he's not going to have those advantages. So it's going to be a very tough road for him. I know he wants to rewrite the ending here, but he may rewrite it in a way that's even worse than having run a very respectable, credible campaign against an incumbent president that came up short in 2012.
Obviously, a lot of time down the road to parse the emerging Republican field, but I did think that David Brooks's little early scorecard and calling out John Kasich as an interesting voice, I thought was interesting. Josh, any take on Romney or where it stands now?
Well, I think Romney's always been a small ball guy. If Romney's the sort of guy who, if he were president and the government launched a website, it would probably work. And I think 2016 is going to be a small election. It will be the last two elections were done amidst some sort of economic crisis. This one probably will not be. Republicans have not been any good at being for things in the last 6 years. They've been very good at being against things. So I don't think the party's ready to run on some new bold agenda. So I think Romney, in a weird way, may be the perfect candidate for 2016 to run on small ideas to change the government in small ways.
Only a couple minutes left. The Supreme Court, as we went to air, Robert Scheer, is agreeing to take the gay marriage question up, which means it'll be argued in a couple of months and perhaps decided by the end of this term. What's the significance of that? What are you expecting?
Well, the court is caught in its own contradiction. It basically has accepted that states can allow gay marriage. Now we have 36 states that allow it. 70% of the American population lives in such states. But the issue which the court is going to address is, do other states have to recognize it? They've already said the federal government does, and they've accepted that cutback on the Defense of Marriage Act. So the real issue is, if people are married and they happen to be in a state that doesn't have gay marriage, is their marriage null and void? And the basic way this union has kept together is that on key issues, we accept the principle that all the states have to accept those rules. And it becomes an issue with some parallels to racial segregation. Can part of the country, if this is a basic human rights question, which I certainly think it is, and I guess the majority of Americans do at this point, can some states decide to have a different standard of human rights and suddenly declare that because you're visiting in that state or you've traveled or you've taken employment, you are no longer married? It's an absurd position. And I suspect if the court is at all committed to logic, it'll come down and say, no, this is in fact a nationally enforceable right.
Josh?
Yeah, I mean, I think game over on this was last year when the court declined to take cases from lower-level circuit courts that had said that gay marriage was required in various states as a result of the Windsor decision about the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. If the Supreme Court was going to stop the march of gay marriage, they would have done it then. One thing we've seen with the politics of this is once you have gay marriage in a state, you really can't undo it because you have a bunch of married people. That was actually at the center of the decision about the California case. The reason that when the Supreme Court didn't do gay marriage nationally last time, they imposed it in California because it was incoherent, basically, to say you could be gay married in California if you had gotten married in this period of a few months when it was legal, but you couldn't thereafter. So I think, you know, I think it's all over but for the hearing and the writing of the judicial opinions.
Rich Lowry, what do you think?
The changes at the state level have been largely driven, although not entirely, by the courts. I agree the Supreme Court will impose gay marriage on all 50 states, and the debate will completely flip around. Will no longer be about whether we have gay marriage or not. It'll be whether churches and other people of faith who dissent from gay marriage will have their rights of conscience honored or not.
Interesting, and we'll watch that. And you guys have been so concise that we've still got a minute for your Oscar reactions. Robert Scheer.
Grand Budapest Hotel. I'm a Wes Anderson fanatic.
Oh, good.
I would have given the Life Aquatic, Life Aquatic an Oscar. Pretty much anything Wes Anderson does, I want to have an Oscar. Plus, this is just a very charming, clever, and moving movie I urge everyone to see.
Bob, did you have any reaction to the Oscar nominations or the Golden Globe Awards?
I think it's very good that Citizen Four, Laura Poitras, a movie on Edward Snowden, has got the documentary, one of the documentary nominations. I think it's really important. I think it's important that Selma be up there in that category. And I think, you know, not every film has to be about politics, but it's good when Hollywood will take on controversial issues. And certainly Selma is a visit to a chapter in American history that we've never really fully analyzed.
Josh?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that was interesting with Selma was it not getting acting nominations including in the Best Actor category, and as a result, it's an all white actor and supporting actor slate this year, which has been very unusual. Now, obviously, you've had a lot of movies with significant African-American themes honored in recent years, including 12 Years a Slave. But I think it's just, it's an interesting juxtaposition between the amount of critical acclaim that there was for that movie and how it, frankly, sort of got snubbed in the awards.
We have reached that time once again for our famed end of show, Left, Right, and Center Rant, featuring pet peeves from across the ideological spectrum. Rich Lowry, you're the only man not in the room. A luxuriant kind of 25 seconds each. Your soapbox.
I want to rant about the continued unwillingness of major mainstream media outlets to show the Charlie Hebdo covers, including the latest cover, which is incredibly brave after staff members are gunned down for running cartoon images of the Prophet Muhammad. They did it again, but on many networks and newspapers, you couldn't see it. So thank goodness not all of us need to be as brave as the editors of Charlie Hebdo, but we should at least show a little bit of gumption, and even by that standard, a lot of our media is failing.
20 seconds, Robert Scheer.
Yeah, this whole thing about the Muslim religion being so terrible towards Jews, it's good to remember that, in fact, most of the history, the great crimes against Jews, great anti-Semitism, came in advanced modern countries and in Christian countries. And if one checks out in Wikipedia, which I love that source, there's the Judensau. And this was the most vicious cartoon, I think, ever developed about Jews. And Martin Luther celebrated it.
Josh Barrow, 20 seconds.
So a surprising announcement from the Justice Department this week that they're going to shut down a large federal civil asset forfeiture program. This is where the government, without even having to charge you with a crime, seizes your property, saying they believe it was involved in the commission of a crime, and you have to sue the government to get it back. And then the police agencies that do the seizing end up keeping the property and using it toward their own budgets. It's a crazy, un-American system that creates terrible incentives. And so it's finally a sign that the federal government is realizing that's not a good idea.
Birdman. That's all I want to say. Go see Birdman. I just saw it about a week ago, and I loved it. And my family is tired of hearing me rave about it. The whole idea of this kind of single shot, the feeling of a single shot for the whole sequence, and the acting is fantastic. The themes are wonderful. So it's top of my list. That's all the list we have time for today on Left, Right, and Center. Thanks, as always, to Rich Lowry, Robert Shear and Josh Barrow. Laura Dime Million produced today's program. Our technical director is J.C. Swadek. I'm Matt Miller. Thanks for listening. Tune in again for more Left, Right, and Center.
You got pajamas. We know we need each other, so we better call the calling of all. Let's call the thing
off. Download the podcast from KCRW.com or from iTunes. And share your comments at kcrw.com/LRC. Left, Right, and Center is produced and distributed by KCRW.